often stated that there's a Chazal which applies, they said it in one context, but it applies in many, many contexts. Chazal tell us, Hakol toli b'mazel, everything in this world needs a little bit of mazel. Afilu Sefer Torah Shabahechel, even the Sefer Torah in the Aron Kodesh also needs mazel. You have 40 Sefer Torah and a big kehila. How many of them get used regularly for Shabbos? 2, 3, 4. One has a schus, then it's the Rosh Chodesh Sefer. Oh. A different one has the schus, then it's the Mafta Sefer. Some of them, they're happy that they open them up, you know, to on Simchas Torah. A kol toli b'mazel, a filo sefer Torah shebeichel. Halochas, also toli b'mazel. They exist side by side, and yet some halochas are ruach chayim, they're alive, they're shailas, people are concerned with them. And other halochas, we just, there's no life to them. They're lifeless. The halacha losh that we're going to talk about tonight is one of those halachas. I would get up to give a share about losh, so most people would tell me, listen. Yeah, it's in the Mishnah and Shabbos and Klal Gadol losh, but you know, this is from Kehila, so none of us are about to make bread on Shabbos, and none of us are about to make a cake, so let's go to something that's relevant to us. And in a certain regard, there are obvious malachas which are in the Mishnah that I will never do in my life. Some have to do with the processing hides. You know, some have to do with the knitting process. Never on the knitting mill. The greatest likelihood is that I never will. So. Yeah, malachas, yeah. To be concerned with Aisha Shnei Batinir and Shabbos seems remote. Losh seems equally remote to most people. And yet, if we stop to think about it, there are many things that we do on Shabbos which get involved with issues of losh. So I first want to point out some of the issues, and then we'll start losh from the beginning. Let's see where we come out. Let's say you're a person with a healthy outlook in terms of your eating habits. So oatmeal is a very popular thing nowadays. It's high up on the list in today's world. Yeah. You know, what do we tend to think about? We think about preparing oatmeal, so we think about there's a problem of bishul, first thing that comes to mind. But the bishul problem, we could at least, at some level, finesse the problem. We've talked about, in terms of bishul, is there an iser of bishul b'kli shlishi or not? So, discussed it recently at Shalash Shudas, that this is an old and ancient machlokes. There are those that say that there's kli rishon and non-kli rishon. Everything that's not a kli rishon, as long as it's yad soledes, this is the same halacha. The second, the third, the millionth kli, it's all the same. There was another view, and that first view, in the most common names that we associate with this are the prichodesh and the chsam soifa. Two pretty heavy duty names. There are those that say that Kli Shlishi has no shaychas to Bishul. There's no Bishul to Kli Shlishi. That is particularly true in Yoredeya. It's trickier to understand exactly. In Huchos Shabbos, it's easier to understand. And there are, in fact, some that are make chaluka between Shabbos and Yoredeya. Because in Shabbos, it is the process which is significant. If the process is too dissimilar to that of the Mishkan, so it's not shayach to Bishul anymore. That's why we have in Hilchos Shabbos, we have a distinction that if you cook something directly in the sun, it's mutter on Shabbos. So if you live in Arizona and you crack an egg and put it outside on a plate, and you come back an hour later and you have a fresh fried egg, you can enjoy it on Shabbos, it's 100% mutter. You can't put a frying pan outside for an hour to get hot and then put an egg into a hot frying pan. That's mutter rabbanan. Because that can too readily be confused with a frying pan which was heated by a fire. You can't see the difference between the two. But if it's in direct sunlight, it's no problem. Heter gomer. Because the process is what drives Hilchos Shabbos. Yisur Heter, the Shulchan Aruch talks about in terms of blia, what causes other things to absorb. How it absorbs is less important, certainly on the non-deraisadic level, and the fact that it absorbs. So there are those achrayim, the prima godim, for first and foremost. Chofetz Chaim certainly cites such a view, even though he only partially endorses it. Clearly, Rav Moshe Feinstein's Atzal was of this view. Kli Shlishi, it's out of the parasha of Bishul, finished. Doesn't cut it. So the Bishul problem, at least we can get around. If you want to be Sanmach on the Shittas, that there's no Bishul with Kli Shlishi, so we use a Kli Shlishi to make the oatmeal. So the Bishul problem is resolvable. But obviously, we're using instant oatmeal. I'm not sure if an instant oatmeal is Bishul altogether. It's a different question. My suspicion is that the bishul that they did that makes an instance is in the gather of Michael Ben Rusoy, that it's not fully cooked yet. That's my suspicion, but I don't know for a fact. I might be mistaken in that regard. But be that as it may. But certainly, at least there's a fix for the bishul problem. But there's a much more serious problem, much more serious, because there is no fix for this problem in and of itself. And that is when you make oatmeal, what are we doing? We're taking a solid substance of small pieces, we're adding liquid to it, and voila, what do we have? We have a mush. That's exactly what losh is. It's exactly losh. So, can we make oatmeal on Shabbos? Yeah. It's, put it in different terms. Can we make baby cereal? Even if, listen, you know, most of us may be Shabbos, we forgo the oatmeal. But how about making baby cereal for a young child? Shabbos. So there we run smack head on into losh. Can I make instant potatoes on Shabbos? Instant mashed potatoes. Want to make it b'kli shlishi? Can I make them on Shabbos? Can I make chocolate pudding on Shabbos? And then there's probably no bishul problem, because there I'm sure that the chocolate is cooked already before. Quite sure the chocolate was cooked already before they made, you know, the mixture. But certainly with klei shlishi there would be no problem. So that's one set of things to consider. So now all of a sudden, from a malacha, you know, everyone read losh bishul, and they went on to bishul. Losh didn't, you know, Losh and Eifer, Losh didn't make it. Nobody ever says Shilas and Losh. But all of a sudden we have a lot of Shilas and Losh. When I started teaching Hilchos Shabbos in a high school setting, I don't know, somewhere around 30 years back, I don't remember exactly when. So at the beginning, the kids used to say, Rebbe, this is relevant to our mother, you're the one from us, you know. After we went on for a while, then they had a different tack. Rabbi, do us a favor, don't tell us too much. It's getting uncomfortable. There's too many things that we're finding out that we're doing that we're not supposed to be doing. That we're doing, not our mothers. So losh is from being, you know, basically something with no real relevance to the from Jew on Shabbos. We certainly have a whole bunch of things that we're involved with on Shabbos. We might want to be involved, some of them we may be involved with, which are real questions of losh. Losh is a malacha d'oraisa. Then we have other issues. And we've talked about the fact that in Toichan Ela Begidule Karka. So we said that despite the fact that in Toichan Ela Begidule Karka, but I can't take an egg or a piece of meat and grind it up in a grinder, even a manual grinder on Shabbos. Well, I guess I'm not supposed to use grinding equipment on Shabbos because it's too similar to the malacha and lead to confusion. So they banned that. But we said, for example, let's say I took an egg and I mashed it up with a fork. So a fork is not a piece of equipment made for grinding. It's not what it was made for. So it's het gomer on Shabbos. So the toichen problem I can solve. Now that I have my mashed egg, now I want to put some mayonnaise in. One thing you learn when you're in yeshiva, you know, hard-boiled egg sandwiches are very popular in yeshivas. You know, they give hard-boiled eggs for breakfast. You mash it up, you put it into a piece of bread, and that's very, very popular in yeshivas. But one thing you learn is that a hard-boiled egg sandwich without mayonnaise in it is a nasty experience. Because the egg goes flying, the hard-boiled egg, the pieces go flying all over the place. If you think it's bad after you eat matzah on Pesach, you know, it's an egg sandwich is far worse. Now, if you put it together with mayonnaise, then it becomes thick. And when you eat it, it stays put. So it tastes good, and the things don't go flying all over the world. So you want to, so I mashed up my egg on Shabbos, now I want to put the mayonnaise in. You could extrapolate to other cases. I could mash up tuna fish. So what would it then be? Or a chopped liver salad. With oil. So these are things which we could reasonably say are rather widely done in many places on Shabbos. And many of the Sfarim struggle to find the terem because they're common in Klal Yisrael. But I think the common factor we're going to find out at the end of the day is to make it glatt kosher, we can't. That we can't. But despite a great deal of strenuous effort by all the mechaber. Now, so we have a bunch of cases now, a whole bunch of cases where suddenly losh is not an academic exercise. It's real, real time. We have problems in Lush all around us. Now, so let's go back to the beginning. Now that we realize that Lush has a lot of halacha l'maisa issues. So let's go back to the beginning. The genius of the Torah Shabbat Peh. Listen, we can't take credit for it. The Rabbeinu Shalom gave it to us. But the genius of the Torah Shabbat Peh is really that it's non-literal. What do I mean by non-literal? If we had 39 Ovos Melochos, they would help us, but they would help us minimally. If a non-Jew had 39 Ovos Melochos, he wouldn't have the foggiest idea what to do and what not to do. The genius of the Torah Shabbat Peh is that every case we deal with can be viewed as a paradigm of the halacha. It demonstrates principles of the halacha. So it's much larger than the particular case that we look at. We extrapolate a principle from it, and the principle is the real essence of what we're talking about. Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal had a very interesting insight into this. And he said, sometimes we learn Gemaras, and the Gemaras are such strange type of cases. The guy stood on his head, and he put out his left foot and his right finger. 17,000 conditions, you know. A nut in Creedmoor would have a hard time, you know, pulling this off. And yet the Gemara talks about it. What's the pshat? Was the Gemara possessed with some strange, far-out story that's very, very unlikely to ever happen in the real world? So he answered incisively. So the Rejim Zatzal said that the point of those cases in the Gemara was not the case. The case is far-fetched. Chazal used it to demonstrate the halachic principle. They wanted a case. Sometimes you need a weird case where you can isolate certain factors which in normal cases you can't find. But by isolating those factors, Chazal have honed us in on what the driving force of the halacha is. Now we're free to go back to apply it to normal cases, but we know we've reduced it to the principle, to the absolute principle of the halacha. And that's why we have sometimes even very strange cases in Shas. So that's the genius of Torah Shabbat Peh is we view everything as a paradigm. It's not only the particular case, and when we talk about Bishul, so what do we extract from Bishul? Bishul is processing by heat. So that's processing by heat is a far cry from just Bishul cooking. It deals with cooking, it deals with baking. Heating tar to soften it is also Bishul. And if I use heat to harden something, that's also Bishul. So we're not looking just merely at what takes place around the stove in the kitchen, but it's far-reaching to many, many other areas of the halacha. If you take something of clay and you bake it in a kiln on Shabbos, and it cuts hard, you have a Bishul. So now we have a picture of an av malacha which is far wider than just the initial oifer that we talked about in the Mishnah. And that's the genius of the Torah Shabbat Peh. That's the difficulty of the Torah Shabbat Peh too. Because it's sweep, it has broad and soaring sweeps. Losh. The simple case of losh is very simple. You take a little flour, a little water, you mix it together. You have a bread, that's losh. But when we look at it in another way, we reduce it to a different principle. And that principle is, if I take small pieces and I combine it with a liquid, and that liquid we're going to put into quotes, because that liquid is not always a liquid, exactly in the sense of the absolute terms of the liquid. We stretch that term pretty far. And things which have a very significant viscosity are also in the realm of liquids. So, from that standpoint, we could make mayonnaise into a liquid. Not exactly, you know, it doesn't pour exactly, but it serves the role of a liquid in terms of losh. So that's the notion of losh. So we need to define always the problem, as I told you, with descriptive terminology. It's non-scientific. And since it's non-scientific, it lends itself to a lot of different interpretations. Small is always a relative term. What are we talking about? Are we talking about a small ant, a small grain of sand, or maybe a small tank? How about a small whale? Well, small is a very relative term. We have to think that one through carefully. And as I said, liquid is also, in our sense, is flexible. But that's what losh is. Now, in the physical process of losh, there are two steps. And then the question is, what is significant in terms of the malacha itself? Which steps are significant and which are insignificant? So in that, the two steps are, we have the combination of the solid and the liquid. That's step one. But pouring water into flour doesn't make a bread and doesn't make a cake. After that, goes the mixing process. And after the mixing process, at least, there's a dough. We have something to talk about. So, what are the critical steps in terms of the malacha of losh? So here in Masechta Shabbos, we find the machlokes of Rabbeinu HaKadosh and of Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbeinu HaKadosh says, merely adding water without stirring is already a violation of the av malacha. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda says, you don't violate the malacha until you stir. Some want to clarify what happens if someone put in the water and I start. Is that enough to me? Or you need both steps? Pashtus Hadvarim is Lachar, if you started, you would be over, but that's, as I said today, side of our discussion for now. But Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda says, after the liquid and you have to stir. Because that's how you wind up with a dough. You don't have a dough until you stir. So the Rishonim that interpret Rabbeinu HaKodesh, that Rabbeinu HaKodesh in principle agrees with Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, that Losh means the real combination of the ingredients, except you don't always have to be thorough. Once you add the liquid to the flour, in part at least, it's going to react. So even though it's not, you know, in the fullest sense it's going to react, but it reacts already part of the way without the mixing. That's enough. That's enough. Takes, you don't have to actually mix it. That's enough mixing, which takes place just by dumping the water in and it's moving itself through. So now this is a very, very central part of understanding Baleches Losh. And we need to keep cognizant of the two separate parts of the Malacha, the combination of the liquid and solid and the storing, the mixing part. They will both play out. Now, how do we pasken in this Machlaikas? So, what's the Jewish answer to how we pasken a Machlaikas? A Machlaikas. You know, what did one of my Rebbeim say? You know, there's a Berhetev that says about one Shabbos, if you say Avorachim, Yeshomim, that you say it, and Yeshomim, that you don't say it, V'chein Noyakin. Says that's what happens. After Shul says Shai, you say it, and after Shul says you don't say it. You know, it's hard for us to imagine that this religion is really supposed to run in a monolithic sense. That there's one day and one view that's lahalocha. Now, we would understand, for example, in this country, there would be something strange if every district in the Court of Appeals had its own version of the law. So if you did this in California, you're a free man. If you did it in New York, you're going to jail. Oops, you know? And in Illinois, they'll give you a fine and won't send you to jail. You realize that this is not a country then. So consequently, when the Court of Appeals disagree with each other, so we have a process. Eventually it winds its way up to the Supreme Court, and they give their rendering, and that becomes the law of the land. All the districts now have to follow them. So the Havdil, the halachic system is the same too. As I say, the nuts and bolts, we didn't live there, so we don't know exactly how, you know, the process, how it moved along the system. But principally, every rov in his place was entitled to paskin as he saw fit. But what happens when there were conflicting psalkin? So eventually, by some process that, as I said, I'm not familiar with how it works exactly, but eventually it made the Shadir, it arrived at the doorstep of the Sanhedrin HaGadol in Yerushalayim. And they would debate it, and they would render a psak. And then every Chochem and Klal Yisrael was obligated to paskin that way. Shiurim, you can give all the shiurim you want. You can give 25 shiurim that the Sanhedrin HaGadol is wrong. As long as you don't paskin Halacha L'Maisa against them, you're fine. If you paskin against them Halacha L'Maisa, you're a Zokin Mamre and Yechayev Misa. Because you're undermining the Messiah of the Halacha. Chazal were very, very concerned after the lapse of the Sanhedrin HaGadol. They deal with the Chagiga and many other places in Chazal, then how in the world are we going to have a religion when Eilu Oisrim, Eilu Matirim, Eilu Matamin, Eilu Matamin, Eilu Poislin, Eilu Machshirim? So how are we going to have a religion? So Chazal's answer to that question was that Kulo Merloya Echad Nitnu, when as Rashi says, Ein echod mehem may be raya elumi Torah Moshe. The discussion is only within the confines of Torah Moshe and what proofs we can deduce from Torah Moshe to resolve the problems at hand. If we're bringing in problems from other disciplines in the world, then we're out of the realm of Torah Moshe. We're not part of the discussion. Our discussion is within the realm of Torah Moshe. Kula meroya echad nitna. So that's the way the religion is supposed to work. And it's interesting, the Vilna Gaon wanted to run the religion that way. In the Hakdoma of the Vilna Gaon on Or HaChaim, it's written by his two sons, so this is Nishkan, it's not a Maisa. It's in print, since the passing of the Gaon, since his sons, you know, put out the B'yar Gron Or HaChaim. It's printed in every edition of the Shulchan Aruch. So they state the Gaon wanted to settle all the machlokes in the Shulchan Aruch. And he wanted to do it in such fashion that he would marshal such overwhelming proof to one of the views in the Shulchan Aruch that Ad Bias HaGoyal would be untouchable. That's what he wanted to do. Why didn't he do it? He got a siman from HaShemayim that the Rebbeinu Shalom didn't want him to do it. So he took a step back. He decided he's not going to go in that direction. So apparently, that's what I believe, that a system of a monolithic halacha is good when we're in our Admas HaKadosh. There's a Sanhedrin. Klal Yisrael is functioning under its own auspices. When we're in the Golos, there are too many difficulties to run the halacha that way. So maybe the Rebbeinu Shalom wanted this system. This is Lechat Chilu, this is B'di Ebed, this is Shas HaTchak, this is a Super Shas HaTchak, I have Sin Maru. In Chutz La'aretz we have, you know, 17 different dais and everything. So if whatever we would ever come together and have one day, we would think it's un-Jewish. There was once, in fact, one non-frum prominent person in the Israeli government that, you know, was appalled at the idea of a unified statement of a position for the Jewish people. He says, it's College of Cardinals, he said, you know, not realizing that where did they take the College of Cardinals from? From the Sanhedrin. Same idea. The Havdal, you know. They set it up to run the same way. The Havdal. So, what do we have? So, what do we have in Klal Yisrael? So, you have a Machlaikas. And what's the Halacha? Also a Machlaikas. Most Rishonim say that the view of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda is lahaloch, meaning that both steps are necessary. You have to put the flour and the water together and you have to mix it. If you don't mix, you're not going to be over losh. Hello, there's a minority of Rishayna, the Sefer HaTrumas, the Ramban. I mean, some pretty heavy names and a good number of them, but it's clearly in the minority who state that the halacha is like Rabbeinu HaKodesh. So now what do we do? Again, it would be un-Jewish to settle the matter. That would be, you know, not the way we work. So the Shulchan Aruch says that lechatchila we should be machmer like the views who hold like Rabbeinu HaKodesh, and that the mixing is not a necessary part of the Malacha. And in effect, what happens is for Shas HaTchak, we go back to Rav Rishonim, who state that the mixing is a necessary part of the Malach. Yeah. Issue number two we have to discuss. Mixtures come in all different consistencies. All different consistencies. You know, a bread dough is about the thickest that we're going to have. Once there's a chemical reaction that takes place, and once that reaction takes place, you can't go back to flour and water anymore. That's history. That's gone. Now, the other thing that takes place is, if you hold a ball of dough like this, it just stays there, basically. Nothing happens. It doesn't, you know, some of it is too heavy, just the whole piece will tear off and fall to the floor. But there's no giving it. It's solid clumps. On the other extreme, we have liquids, which are very thick, which are clearly liquids. Like a thick shake. It's a liquid. There's no question. There are no solids in it. It's just a very, very thick liquid. Then we have things which are in between. We have, for example, a pancake batter, which we could reasonably say it's a solid, but it's not a very thick solid. I don't think we'd want to drink it through a straw. Probably wouldn't work too well. It's more solid than liquid, clearly. And then we can ask ourselves what to do with all the things which come in between a pancake batter and a bread dough. A cake dough. A cake dough is in between. It's much, much thicker than a pancake batter, but it's not nearly as thick as a bread dough. And our oatmeal case is not as thick as a bread dough, but not as thin as a pancake batter. So where do we go now? So let's take a look a little bit. Perhaps we'll deduce a little bit from the Rishayna, from the Paiskim, where they draw the lines. Now, so what's the difference if it's a thick or a thin mixture? The difference between, for example, a bread dough and a pancake dough batter, a pancake batter, to make a pancake batter is also a derabbanan, it's not a deraisa. To make a bread dough is an isa deraisa of mush. Now, there's a big difference between the two. You know, we need to learn, in being a student of the halacha, that isur derabbanan, we can't be frivolous with them. The Chazarish Zatzal used to put it in this fashion. He says, yeah, it's true. It's something that he said to Rabbanan. He says, someone buys and eats unsalted meat. What do we call him? Aroichel Treifus. What did he violate? He said to Rabbanan. So, the Rabbanan also has to be taken very, very seriously. But there's a difference. We have, because they were the Rabbanan legislated, the Rabbanan also could legislate license too. So since the Rabbanan are the ones that created it, they also legislated license at times of how to get around it, or what cases it doesn't apply to. Whereas a deraisa, which was not our legislation, we're not free to decide how we want it to be muta. Now, let's go back to our first baby cereal case. Now, this happens to be is a very, very important issue. It's important from two different stadiums. It's important for little children, but it's also, we're going to come to this, it touches upon things which are very important for older people. In the healthcare, many older people have impairments in their ability to swallow. Now, I presume that, now what they do is they make the food thicker than it normally would be, and the thick food apparently helps find its way down the esophagus rather than being aspirated into the lungs. If it's being aspirated into the lungs, they'll get pneumonia, so it's a pretty serious matter. So they have something, a powdery substance they call thicket, which is added to pureed foods to make it thicker. They have thick liquids that they use, which are thicker. They're liquids, they're water, but they're thicker than typical water by certain additives that they put in, so that the people should be able to swallow them properly. So we're going to come to the fact that either for young children or for older people, we have issues. So the simplest thing, and that's assuming, let's first deal with a young child. So I don't know how I came to discuss it, but I recall discussing it with Ramosha Chait, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the Rosh Yeshiva of Chofetz Chaim in Yerushalayim. We were once discussing, so he said, yeah. Is when my kids were little, they're older than I am as kids today, but when my kids were little, yeah, I used to make the baby cereal very soupy on Shabbos to get around the mush problem. Made it very soupy. Now, if you make it on the soupy side, so it's very loose, so then we're dealing, you're not going to deal with a deraisa dika lush. So then the halacha has a resolution for how to do this on Shabbos. What is the resolution? We pointed out at the beginning that there are two physical parts to the malacha of lush. There's putting the water and the salad together, and then there's the mixing. So the halacha demands, in fact, that we make two shinuyim. Change each part of the process. So step number one is to determine which is the normal process. Do we add the liquid to the solid or the solid to the liquid? Now, most of the time, for obvious reasons, we're adding the solid to the liquid as the norm. The liquid to the solid. Most of the time, we're adding the liquid to the solid. because it's just a lot more practical. When you add a solid to a liquid, it's hard to get it to dissolve properly. When you add the liquid to the liquid spreads around, the solid dissolves much more readily. But whatever the normal process is of the combination, you have to reverse it on Shabbos. So if I wanted to make soupy oatmeal on Shabbos, so the first thing I have to do is reverse the process of the combination of the ingredients. So I first put in the water, and then I add the powder. Step number one. Step number two is in the storing part, I also have to have a shinoi. So the shinoi could be that I don't store it at all, and I just shake the bowl and hope it dissolves in that fashion. Or there's another shinoi we could use, and that is, what is the notion of a shinoi? The Gemara even talks about what's a shinoi, and the Gemara is, what's a shinoi? Because Pashtus is, not all Achronim hold that way, but certainly the Lechatchila, the Halacha is, shinoi means that the process is degraded and inefficient because of how I'm doing it. That's a shinoi. If it's merely I'm doing it in a different fashion than I normally do, but it's as efficient as the way that I normally do it, that's not a shinoi. You know, suppose that to scratch my nose was a malocha. To scratch my nose with my left hand would not be a shinoi in the malocha. Again, I'm talking lechatchila. Why? Because with all the deficiencies of my left hand, but to scratch my nose, it can do a very good job. If I had to bang a nail with a hammer, I think my right hand would be petrified. You know, if I undertook to do it with my left hand, you know, I could, in a very, very, very rudimentary fashion, fetch out my name with my left hand, but extremely rudimentary. If I try to throw a ball with my left hand, I don't think the results would be too good. So those are, so to use my left hand in that fashion, yeah, that's a shinoi. So a shinoi principally means something which interferes with the efficacy of the process, its efficiency. So the halacha defines storing in excess. Normally we just store, we keep going around and around and through, so we go through the whole thing and we store it up. If I go across, and then I go to the top, and I go down, and then I go back across, and then to the top and go down, and I don't store through the whole thing, it's a very inefficient process. So that is a shinoi. There's even a machloikis concerning it. The Chazanish said that I have to take the, let's say, the spoon out in between the strokes of the X. So in other words, once I went from east to west, then I have to put it on the north end and stroke south, and take it out again and go from east to west. Rav Moshe Feinstein allowed you to make, basically, to come around. In other words, without, I guess, stirring strongly, but you go across and then bring the spoon around, sort of like in an eight. There's also a shilu. Our kaponim, so our blilo, what we call a blilo raka, a soupy mixture, a loose mixture, I can make with two shinuyim on Shabbos. Now, the problem is, let's say, suppose I want to make a thick mixture on Shabbos. So there we run into the machloikis of Rebbe and Rabbi Yosef Rebbe Yehuda. As soon as I add the liquid to it, so Rebbe says I was over the malocha. So who cares how I store it after the fact? It's a difference. After I cook the egg, is it make a difference if I put pepper or salt in? The malocha's over already. So finished. I added water, I did the malocha. So according to Rabbi HaKadosh, you're dead in the water. You can't do such a thing. According to Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, it's possible to do such a thing. Why? Because if I ultimately don't store it in a normal fashion, then I haven't completed the malacha. Now, it's not going to be better than Blila Raka. So by a loose mixture, we say you have to do two things differently. We have to reverse the order of the combination of the ingredients and change the manner of the storing. So Rabbi Ava is not going to be better than that. But according to the view of Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, we could have a heter to make a thick mixture by reversing the order of the ingredients and then doing the storing with shinoi. So I never actually did the malocha. So the halacha was saimach on this for a shasat chak. So again, so if you have a baby, for example, it's very finicky. They don't, you know, you're having problems. They don't eat that much. And if you give them soupy cereal, they spit it out. They're not used to it. Or a little later, you have an older person you have to take care of that, for health reasons, must have something thick. They're not allowed to have thin things. So then those are situations which are shasat chak. And we can on Shabbos make this blila abu with two shinuyim. So, yes. Because for a simple reason, there are two steps in the malacha. Some say you need to do both steps to violate the malacha. Our kolbonim, it can't be better than a blila raka. And a blila raka, a loose mixture, they will mechayev a shinuy in each step in the malacha to differentiate it clearly from the av malacha. So a blila av is not going to be better than that. So here we have a heter. We go back to, if it's really necessary, we go back to being Samech and Rov Shitas Rishayim, and we say it's Mutter. Let's go forward one step, and then we'll go back a little bit more. Now, Lomdus is important not only in the theoretical understanding of things, but of the real understanding of things. So I'll ask you the following Shiloh. I want to make a coffee on Shabbos. Okay? So now I took a fine powder, coffee, and I mixed it with water. So was that a Yisra of Losh or not?
Not combining
the Zahra. Oh. So Nimnu Vagomra, all the Paiskim agree that this has nothing to do with Losh. Why? Because at the end of the day, the solution that I have is thinner even than what I started with. Is that you don't have any pieces that are held together. Right? At the beginning, at least I had pieces. I don't even have pieces when I'm finished. They've disappeared into the solution. So if the role of the liquid is ultimately to thin out that which I have, they say that's the exact antithesis of Losh. Losh is to take the pieces and bring them together. Here I took the liquid, and what did I do? I dispersed the pieces with it. So that's conceptually the opposite of Losh. Now, let's take a look at some of the cases that we have. I was ma'ayin in the Hilchos Challah. Because in Hilchos Challah we also find there's the discussions of Blila Ava and Blila Raka. So I found in the Aruch HaShulchan, Aruch HaShulchan is a very interesting shita. I think we tend to be more machmer than the Aruch HaShulchan in this regard, but let's tell you. But what's the Aruch HaShulchan shita? It bases it upon a Rambam. He says that he's talking particularly in Chalas Chutz La'aretz, which is totally Midrabbanan. Chalas Eretz Yisrael is today Midrabbanan, but it's Ikro Minatayra, because in the time of the Migdash it was Minatayra, and we treat it more machmer with that halacha. That's basically, we try to conduct ourselves as if it were a deraisa. So he says there's a difference between something which was made for a bread and something which was made for a cake. So he says a cake is potter from challah. A bread is chayav in challah. That's his shita. He bases it upon a Rambam. So he comes to disagree. There's a pischei tshuva that learned pshat in one of the cases in the Shulchan Aruch. And the pischei tshuva said that it's exempt from challah, this cakey dough, because it was a blila raka. It was a very soupy dough. The case that he was talking about. So Aruch HaShulchan says it doesn't have to be soupy. It could even be a blila ava. Now, a blila ava, but nevertheless, since it's being made for cake purposes and not for bread purposes, that's a sheet that's exempt from challah, at least in challah's chutz la'aretz. Now, what's the example that he gives that he's talking about? He's talking about lekach. Lekach. Now, lekach is a sponge cake, basically. You have to realize the difference, Rabbi Yisai. You know, my people come from Poland and Russia. In that part of the world, yeast cakes were not the norm of the day. That's not what they made. You know, the fancy cake was a marble sponge cake. That was the height of, you know, fanciness. You know, in Central Europe, they were rather well-heeled as compared to Polish Jewry. And there they indulged in the luxury of yeast cakes, the kokosh cake, you know, the chocolate roll cake was not invented in Poland. They wouldn't have had a thought in Poland to make such a cake. You know, even the richest Jew in Poland maybe would have thought of it, maybe. But this was not a Polish thing. In Central Europe, yeah, they had kokosh cake. So the Aruch HaShulchan, when he's talking about lekach, he's not talking about a yeast cake. And the dough tends to be pretty much on the thin side of those cakes. That's why they're so soft and spongy. It's a very thin dough. And the Aruch HaShulchan is describing that as a blila ava. He says, I don't need to go to the extreme of the pischi tshuva to make it into a blila raka. You could have it as a blila ava. But a blila ava, it is not a bread dough. It's not a yeast cake. So it's clear from the Aruch HaShulchan that the Aruch HaShulchan considered the common cakes that we make, even though they pour somewhat, they're different than bread doughs. When your wife pours them from the mixing bowl into the pan, she can pour them. You can't pour a bread dough. Bread you have to shape, you have to make aricha with it. You can't pour it. But nevertheless, the Aruch HaShulchan is clear that he considers it a blila ava, the lekach. So that to me, I decided this time I really wanted to see what I could find, which would pin down for me where the definitions were. How do I explain them? Understood blila ava, blila raka. So Aruch HaShulchan was the clearest because he addressed head on what I wanted to know. I found other indications of it as well. And that is, Ramosha wrote that pudding, if you make it as a blila raka, so you connect with the two shinuya. But if you make it as a blila ava, then you can't make it at all on Shabbos. Now, a pudding, as thick as you're going to make a chocolate pudding, it's not as thick as a bread dough. There's no two ways about it. You know, it could be as thick as a cake. That's about as thick as it's getting. It's not getting thicker than that. So that also lent itself to the fact that a blila, that consistency is in the realm of blila ava. Now we found another few cases which I think also lend themselves to the fact that you don't need the consistency of a cake dough to have a blila ava. Ramosha said that instant mashed potatoes you're not allowed to make on Shabbos. So apparently, in other words, the way that they're made is instant mashed, he considered that a blila ava. And that's certainly far thinner than a cake dough. Far thinner. It's not, it may be a little thicker than a cake, but it's far thinner than a cake dough. It's not the deity. What else did we find? There's another case, 1 second. Oh, which becomes relevant at this point. Ramosha wrote, and I'll tell you the Chazon Ish, that Tzal agreed with this as well, at this point, that the tuna salad is a blila ava. Okay? So that's certainly nowhere near a cake dough. No matter how you want to make it, you can't make it into a cake dough, a tuna salad, or an egg salad. He called it, Ramosha wrote specifically in the Tshuvas, it's a blila ava. And in discussion with Rabbi Yoshev Zatzal, Rabbi Yoshev undoubtedly also held it's a blila ava. Now, the fact, all types of people are looking for heterim for this on Shabbos. You know, I don't want to start up with all the Hasidim with the Tzvibalai on Shabbos and mixing the eggs with the oil, whatever, but it's, you know, this harm of scratching the heads, really, to find the heter. So there is a Shita, there was a Godel, I forgot his name, he lived in Eretz Yisrael in the early part of the 20th century, and he wrote a sefer called Shvisas HaShabbos, which basically goes through all the Yobos Malach. It's a very nice sefer. And he contends the following. His contention was that we have a number of malachas which only apply to gedulei karka. We said in toichan ela begedulei karka, for example, dosh is only begedulei karka. His claim is that losh is also only begedulei karka. So according to him, so there's no losh. In other words, in the same way that there's no toichan, so there's no losh. But it's a rather unusual shita. And as I say, I don't think Smucha from Rishonim, I think that he found, I don't believe. So this was the, I asked Rabbi Yoshev Zatzal about it. So he said that he does not consider that, in other words, a shita to rely upon on Shabbos. It's a das yochid. It does not find, you know, he did, obviously did not find a mocker for it that satisfied him, that it was a satisfactory, you know, statement of the halacha. So if we're dealing with Lila Ava, then we have problems. We shouldn't be making these things on Shabbos. You should really be making them before Shabbos. Now, if you want to have your eggs with mayonnaise on Shabbos, you didn't make it. So then you have to make big pieces, cut big slices. And then you can put mayonnaise in the sandwich. And you're not going to violate Lush, because Lush says you have to have little pieces. So if you make big slices of egg, it's certainly not little pieces.
How big is big?
Slices. Slices certainly would be big enough. That it's, you know, if you can make a slice, it didn't fall into the realm of Teuchen for that reason, because it's a slice that is not going to fall into the realm of Lush either.
Half slice and quarter slice.
You know, you listen, you probably can still get away with that. You know, when you start to get down to the edge and then you start cutting it and dice, you know, you're soon going to be starting to dice it into small pieces. In the middle, I would think you can cut it into four pieces and nowhere's yet near a problem. So, we need to follow the sheet of the Boy Scouts. The Boy Scouts' motto was be prepared. So what did Chazal say? Chazal said it before them. Misha Tarech Be'erev Shabbos, Yoichol B'Shabbos. Want to eat on Shabbos? So then get up Friday morning and prepare your food for Shabbos. So prepare the salads too, the tuna salads and the egg salads. You know, take the extra 10 minutes and prepare them. And they'll be ready for Shabbos.
The fact that you're mashing in the process, like you start from big pieces, does that make a difference? In other words, you're not joining little pieces, you're creating...
It doesn't make a difference. At the end of the day, you have little pieces that are combined. So where you started is not going to help us. Where we end is going to be the problem. So, as I said, I'm not the one, my general view, I told people, and especially in this subject, it's especially important, where there are all types of a terror flying around in legitimate form, I mean, of renowned Paiskim. I mean, even though Rav Moshe and the Rav Yoshev did not really sign off on any of the Heterim in reality. You know, I tell people in terms of the Shirum that I give, if you hear something that's inconsistent with what you do, so that means you have to ask a Shaila. Go ask your own Rav, your own Murder Hero, what he holds he's supposed to do. You know, maybe he has a Shita, what's just other than that? You know, especially in this area, I don't want to cast stones or aspersions on anyone, you know, to call them Chalila Mechala Shabbos if they do otherwise. I'm only talking about what I think is to the Chatchila, the way to go.
So what about adding spices like crushed garlic to food?
They allow, I haven't yet to figure out exactly the reason for it. But the Paiskim allow one to add the crushed spices. I presume the reason for it is because the intention is not really to combine two pieces of pepper. You want to spread the pepper throughout the egg or the potatoes or the meat, whatever it is. So you're not out to, and it's not mukhach that you ever will attach two pieces of pepper to each other. So that seems to be the reason that it's mutter is a fact. I'm speculating what the reason. I've hacked a lot about this over the years. And to tell you an absolutely definitive lumdus of why it's mutter, I don't know. I haven't, but I think this is a close to the point. That what you're out to do is to add the pepper to it, not to attach the different pieces of pepper. At the end of the day, you don't have a clot of pepper, you know. It's not like I took 100 grains of pepper and a little bit of mayonnaise, and now I have a clump of pepper. That's what I presume the pshat is. But nimnu v'gomru, then it's mutter. Okay, we'll hold it at this point, already. So.